The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Welcome everyone to Libra Planet's talk. This talk is titled Toward the Moral Objectivity of GNU and will be presented by Blair Vidakovich. Blair is a community organizer and software freedom advocate from Perth, Western Australia. He advocates for a deepening and broadening of our culture incessantly, wherever and whenever he can. Blair, perhaps you could begin by expanding upon what the title of the talk means.
Yeah, definitely. So hello everybody. I have no idea who's watching, but I assume someone is. So I have a philosophy background, and one of the really cool things about doing my previous PhD studies was coming into contact with open source and free software for creating documents and sharing ideas and sharing data. And as time went on, I actually became much more focused on the technical computer side of things, so much so that when I found out that the GNU project had, you know, Geeks, the Geek system, and I was able to use Emacs as my window manager. So I'm speaking to you from inside Emacs right now. It just blew my mind. And I really wanted to know more about how the whole culture and movement worked. And the more I looked into it, the happier I was. It seemed to gel with my political convictions as well. So when I talk about towards the moral objectivity of GNU, I mean, you know, why is the GNU so good for the human nature? For human nature, why is GNU so productive and cooperative? And the more I looked into it, philosophically, the more I became convinced that there must be something to this. There must be something, a part of the human condition, a part of being human, that GNU connects with. And I think it does. And if you look at the way humans have evolved, if you look at the way any kinds of organisms evolve, you see that the ones that cooperate more and the ones that share more and the ones that develop deep connections of interdependence and codependence, you see that they evolve a lot faster and they evolved a lot more successfully. So that's really the crux of what I wanted to get across in this talk. And I don't want to talk for too long. I want to field questions from as many people as possible. But I think that if humans have evolved a certain way, then I think that it follows that there must be a set of moral precepts or moral axioms that humans really must need. And I think when it comes to free software, we've stumbled upon it. We've stumbled upon the solution to the to the problem, really. It's one of the things I got to look at when I was doing my PhD was how humans evolved language, and it turns out that, you know, computer software is a kind of language, and communicating through your computer requires language. And when you look at, you know, back in the Neolithic period, or perhaps even further, you can see that language was used to coordinate behaviors and mark social occasions. And so, because humans are so social in this way, the way that the GNU project or the GNU movement has gone about achieving its aims over the last few decades, I think gels with that. It gels with how humans have evolved. One of the really sad things is that people usually take the idea of natural selection to be one of competition, to be one of dragging people down or dragging others down and, you know, engaging in mutual struggle. And I'm not trying to say that animals and humans don't compete, because sometimes they do, but I'm trying to say that it works better when they cooperate and when they work together and when they share ideas and when they can practice, say, for instance, the GNU movement's four freedoms. I wanted to keep it nice and simple, because if I wrote a big presentation of, say, you know, 15, 20 minutes and used really long words and stuff, I don't think that would really get across what I've observed and what I've learnt since being involved in the free software movement, especially here in Perth with my tiny little Linux users group. That's more or less it. Does anyone have any questions? Does anyone want to know what I mean by when I say moral objectivity? I think I probably moved away from using such an inflammatory phrase in the last few months as I've been refining my PhD thesis and moving in a different direction, but I definitely still think that the GNU Project's Four Freedoms are something that connect with human nature, definitely the way we've evolved. And also, I'm really sorry for my dirty bedroom.
Great, Radak. I wasn't expecting you to go that deep, but perhaps you could revisit what do we mean by moral objectivity. Like, moral objectivity to me sounds like something scientific and not really like based on intuition.
Okay, yeah, I can answer that. So moral objectivity is the idea that, number one, there are moral facts, and the other idea is that those facts are knowable.
Sorry to interrupt. Can you share your webcam? I think it's...
Oh, okay. I don't know how that happened, but there we go. I don't know how we lost webcam, but we're back.
It's all right. Yeah, sure.
So what is moral objectivity? So a lot of people think that it's a religious thing, but it's not a religious thing for me, actually. It's something that's very much based in observing how humans move through the world, how humans interact with each other, how humans practice give and take. And I can see on IRC that someone's asked what they wanted to ask, that they want to know how it's GNU related. So I'll give you an example. I follow the GNU Geek System mailing list, and I follow the Emacs Bug Devel mailing list, and I see people engage in give and take on those mailing lists. And so I see people report issues or fix issues, and none of this really has any kind of monetary reward or maybe it has a certain amount of social reward, but the GNU project is one that is based upon altruistic aims. Surely we'd all agree with that. And so by looking at the aims of the GNU project and seeing how well we succeed at being able to carry those out, I think that shows that it connects with a part of human nature. I think it connects with a part of how humans are meant to be organized in terms of producing software. Does that answer your question? Does that answer that question a little bit more deeply, hopefully?
Yeah, I think it does. Let me touch on that, what you said, like on forums and mailing lists, we see people cooperating and helping each other out. Maybe not even for financial gains, but maybe because it's meaningful, because it's interactive and there is a human component in there. So that could also be a kind of an objective measure. Like, we don't see that in any proprietary software. I don't think there's a Gmail forum or a Microsoft, maybe there is a Microsoft Windows forum, but there's mainly the people helping there are the company's staff and not like a community and people helping each other because it's meaningful. Maybe that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with that. The reason why I wanted to share this talk was because it connects with some political values that I hold. So I'm a reasonably left-wing person, and I cooperate with a lot of left-wing activist groups here in Perth. And one of the really cool things has been able to introduce them to the GNU Project software. So, you know, you might start off at the one party office that I frequent. We managed to get them running a GNU Linux streaming computer that just sits there, and we plug a microphone and a webcam into it. And so, yeah, I probably agree with Ted P3 on IRC by saying it is cooperation and shared values. One of the objections that I come across when I talk about the objectivity of some moral values is that a lot of people would say, well, aren't morals subjective, or should we be talking about ethics instead of morals? And I think I wanted to go a bit stronger than that. I wanted to say, I think free software connects with human interaction and human behavior in a very deep way. And I think you could probably even take a term from Marx and say it's a very advanced mode of production. It's a very advanced form of building anything. You know, you're using a computer with tools in it to build further computers and further tools. So it's a really complex human process that occurs in a very high level of abstraction, but at the same time, I think connects with our biological processes that we've evolved since, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. We have to communicate openly. We have to share and share ideas and make sure that things are open and transparent to each other. And if they don't, then you see hierarchies develop, and those hierarchies are frequently very toxic. So you mentioned, you know, Microsoft Windows forums. I think most of the time on a Microsoft Windows chat dialogue box, number one, you're not talking to a human. You're probably talking to some bot, right? And number two, they probably just tell you to reinstall Windows. That's what happens 9 times out of 10. As opposed to really trying to nut down and understand what's going on inside your computer and helping raise the level of education in our users and our movement, which is what the GNU Project tries to do. I see these as virtues that are intrinsic inside humans. And I think that they connect with us deeply. And this is the reason why some amazing conferences like Libra Planet can get put on. This is the reason why, Emacs solves so many problems for me, because it's a 40, 50 year project that might have a lot of cruft in the source code, but it works, and it works because it's free software. I suppose that's what I wanted to get across. Yes. Oh, cool. Ted P3 was happy with that answer. Nice to see you on IRC.
Yeah. One thing that I draw from this is, like, in non-free philosophy or like proprietary system philosophy, is like, we tell you what to do and not how it's done and how to make it work better for you when you want it, how you want it.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the really cool things about, I think I've actually got an introduction. I'm just going to, hopefully you guys don't say that I'm not properly dressed, but I've got this. So Emacs Lisp, right? I read this book. And one of the really cool things about the book is that they tell you some of the shortcomings of the coding, or they tell you, oh, we don't know why it's like this inside here, but we're going to be open and tell you. I might even be able to find the right I'm not going to be able to find the right paragraph. I just picked this off my shelf because it seemed to make sense. But this is a GNU Press book. You can see it there, Free Software Foundation. I'm amazed that when you look through the documentation for GNU Project software, there's an openness that things don't always work the way we want them to work. Whereas if you are reading, well, first of all, you can't read the source code to Windows unless you sign a non-disclosure agreement, perhaps. But, you know, one of the things that happens when you have hierarchies is you have people nodding along to the leader a lot of the time and say, oh, yes, yes, you know, this is how Windows works. Yes, Bill Gates, yes, 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 this sort of stuff. And when there's problems, they're papered over, you know. But I think one of the cool things about our movement is that we're not afraid to admit that sometimes things don't make sense, or if there was a later version of a function in Emacs that works a bit worse than the previous one, we're open about that, and we can fix it. And because we're open about it, we can fix it. That's one of the cool things about free software that I think the reason why, like I said, the reason why it works is because of the way humans work. Yeah. So if we're open and transparent about even the problems that we have, that makes us so much better.
Yeah. Perhaps we also should make the transition to free software like less intimidating, because like in proprietary software, perhaps Windows and Mac, when something does not work, it's like, okay, we'll push a fix sometime later. You don't have to know what's wrong with the system, what happened. We'll fix it sometime. And in Linux, like, it shows you all the errors, and it tells you exactly how you can fix it. Like, you can go on the internet and find solutions, and that's not always possible with proprietary software.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what hackers frequently forget, sometimes I forget it too when I'm hacking, you know, I'll be sitting in this dirty bedroom alone, you know, late at night with the light off and typing. Programming is a social enterprise fundamentally, I think. And if we forget that, I think we've forgotten the whole purpose of doing this. And not that we all frequently forget it, but yeah, proprietary software, it's very much a Pandora's box. You know, you don't get to look inside, you don't get to understand how it works. And that's a sad thing. And I think we're much more developed humans in the free software movement. I don't mean to call us like kings or queens or anything, but like we're better off as a result of sharing our ideas. I'm just reading a couple of things on IRC here.
But
you're right. I do agree with Ian when we look at proprietary software and we see that it's the opposite of the free software movement in terms of fitting with our biology. And yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, if you go to work and you're told you have to write this thing and you can't tell anyone about it, you know, you're not even going to get credit for it. You'll get your name put on the list of contributors at the end in the about page of Windows, but you're certainly not going to get that level of human connection. I think there's definitely something anti-human about proprietary software, and we should be critical of that. We should be shouting it from the rooftops. We should say, you know, when you get that sad blue screen of death on Windows, you're not getting true software freedom. You know, this sort of stuff. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, what world do we want to live in, and who decides? Like, developing software is like deciding what world we want to live in, and our next generations to live in. Like, we should not be delegating the authority.
Yes. No, that's absolutely right. Totally. We should not be, especially when it's open to you, especially when these things are, you know, you just go into the GNU.org website, or you go into the Gix website, these websites, and you can just interrogate it to your heart's content. Obviously, that's not for everybody, but it is possible to deliver free software operating systems or tools to people that are easy to understand and easy to approach. And I think when you understand a little bit more about the reason why things work, you're happier and you're more developed as a human, I think. You know, when you interrogate further if you can. And yeah, I really agree with people agreeing with me in IRC that non-free software is non-human. I absolutely agree with that. If you don't know what they're collecting about you, why they're collecting that data about you, what they're using it for instance, it's crazy. It's really crazy. In fact, the world that the Silicon Valley giants and Microsoft buy into is a very thin, very cynical view of human nature. And I think the GNU project has a much more utopian and, for that reason, optimistic view of human nature. So really, like, even free software has a more compelling view of the human. So Ted's asked another question in IRC, which is non-free software antisocial? Yes, I would say that non-free software is antisocial. And for that reason, and I have a bit of an explanation why. So there was this really famous book by a guy called Richard Seymour. It's called The Twittering Machine. And it came out in, say, 2019, 2020. And this was before we knew much about the Facebook algorithm or that the Facebook algorithm, what was known about it in common parlance, was not very high at all. They based their picture of the human on a form of psychology called behaviorism. Behaviorism is treating the human like a computer. It's treating the human as if the human just has inputs and outputs, and we don't care about what's going on inside our minds or our brains. And for that reason, they think they can sell adverts and put metadata collected, algorithm-driven sort of bullshit, you know, this sort of stuff. This is a very thin view of human experience. And so for this reason, I would call non-free software antisocial. I would call Facebook or all these kinds of these programs that collect data for metadata advertisement selling antisocial and anti-human. It's anti-human and antisocial because it believes in Skinner's behaviorism or Pavlov's. You might have heard of Pavlov's dog, this idea that, you know, you ring the bell, the dog salivates. That's the level of human nature that, you know, a lot of our non-free proprietary software developers are treating humans as. They're like, we don't need to educate these people about what a computer is. We don't need to care about the human position and the computer position within society. Yeah, that's, so yeah. So yeah, I'd really agree with what ISF said on IRC. It is a complete immorality and injustice. And we do have we really should be demanding that free software is something that humans deserve. And I think that's a good verb to use. We deserve to have good software. We deserve to have free software. There's a question here from Ian. What do I think about free software that is almost entirely developed by a company? The way the company and the employees behave can have parallel proprietary software. Yeah, that's true. That's true. You can have, and I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but you've got big Linux distributions, which I might not name, that are developed by one or two companies or get funding from strange sources. There's not really any point in naming them, but it is true. If there is a hierarchy involved in developing a piece of software, it's like what that famous psychologist said, the hierarchies of communication that you have in a social organism that's developing, say, a piece of engineering, that will get reflected inside that piece of engineering. And so you can see how free software and the four freedoms are really important for promoting good pro-social behavior, not just in hacker circles, but also within the software community at large and society at large. So if we had a you know, if you have your basic unit of software development and you treat that with egalitarian ideas, I think that's going to lead to egalitarian results when the software is implemented or spread out more widely. And the converse goes, if you have a hierarchical, very top-down, very marketing-based piece of engineering, you're going to end up with hierarchical, top-down systems of control that result as a result of that piece of engineering. So, yeah, I definitely agree with what Ian was saying, yeah. So when it comes,
I was just pointing to another question by Ian. I thought it was actually relevant. It's Vidak. What do you think about corporate-driven, controlled free software program? Oh, I think you touched on distributions built that way, right? And I'm sure you're also familiar with frameworks, like frameworks developed by Facebook, like I believe it's React, and by Google it's AngularJS, and Microsoft also Visual Studio Code for developers. But I think even Visual Studio Code, they say it's open source free software, or they portray it that way, but I think there is still telemetry in there. And I've also seen like real world examples where companies and corporations like portray their software as open source, and then the next paragraph is like open source components, open source fonts provided by some Google fonts or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So JavaScript is I don't want to say cesspool. I may as well just say cesspool. JavaScript is just one of the worst things ever. I think it started for pushing all this code in, all this proprietary code into client-side execution, makes me despair. I'm just trying to. But yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of. It's all appearance, if I can answer the question like that. It's appearance and not essence. Yep. And what we really want is a thoroughgoing culture of practicing or, you know, pushing forward or advocating our freedoms in software, because it leads to pro-social results. Whereas a proprietary or open source in appearance only is still having those negative antisocial effects. They're still collecting that telemetry, like you said. And it's a gleam. It's like a gloss that they put over the front of IDEs. I see people in the IRC saying cesspool is fair. I think a big example could be the Gemini protocol. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of this or if you peeps have heard of this, but the Gemini protocol is an amazing community-driven application layer, a hypertext protocol that technically has a beneficent dictator for life, but the way it's developed and the way it's been spread across the internet has just been breathtaking. I remember watching on the Fediverse in 2019 when people were first spitballing about it. They were like, what about Gopher but with TLS? And the idea that you can set up, for instance, a server in an afternoon code a server in an afternoon, is amazing. It's just so much more freedom than you have with web-driven development, for instance. You just get bogged down in frameworks or all the millions of components that the web has. That's another example I have of like free software-driven protocols.
People can't even bypass those advertisements that like automatically pop up, multiple advertisements on a single web page by default.
Yeah, it's terrible. I have people who watch YouTube on their, you know, their consoles in their houses, and they just watch the ads. And I'm like, you can run a pie hole, you know? I promised my mate Bob that I'd give him a pie hole, you know, one of those Raspberry Pi, and you just connect to the wireless on the Raspberry Pi, blocks all the ads at the DNS level. Mm. It's really, yeah, especially when you get, and the Aussies in the chat will understand, it's Clive Palmer ads, like these right-wing political ads that even get shown on YouTube. I don't know how they get away with this. You know, it's really frustrating. So I can see someone disagreeing in the IRC chat. I'll move over into the frame here. So I would not agree, and they say for two reasons. One, you can sell free software, and it is not a problem. Two, what if the person changes their mind about it? Should they be punished for life? So this is probably comes back to the whole subjective versus objective way that I've spun how morality works. Yeah, you can sell free software. I personally don't sell the software that I've developed, that I've licensed with the GPL. It comes back to the whole free beer versus free software distinction. I personally would not sell software, but it's up to everybody, of course. Like I don't know much GPL software that's actually sold, you know, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's us practicing mutual aid and trying to decrease the cost of living by cooperating with our freedoms, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and not putting software behind like paywalls. But a donation model is still like it's great. Obviously, it is like you have the choice. If the software works for you, if you are getting value from it, you can donate to the developers or this
project
directly.
Yeah, I seem to remember an old Radiohead album that came out in say like 2008 or 2007 or something was "Pay as You Wish." And it turns out that they made more money on that album where people could donate than they had for any other the other albums that you had to pay for. So, you're probably making money through a donation strategy, I guess. But this is just my particular take. I'm a big lefty. So when it comes to software, I personally wouldn't sell it. But if there was a piece of software that was free that I thought I was getting a massive amount of help from, I would definitely donate. I would definitely be contributing that financially. Right. Like, I thought Emacs is amazing, so I bought some of the Emacs books from the Free Software Foundation, and that's a great way to give back, you know, or buy stickers. Yeah. You know, like stickers are amazing. I stick them on everything. Yeah.
There is a lot of conversation on the IRC chat.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation on IRC. I'm trying to follow it. I knew we'd probably get bogged down a little bit on what the purpose of selling or buying software is for. I think what you're really doing when you buy software is sure giving consideration for the lines of code that you're being able to read. But I think it's more a human contribution. I think you're recognizing the effort that someone puts into free software when you're paying for it, as opposed to paying for a product. I don't think free software necessarily angles itself or positions itself as a product. It's definitely something that...
Like a tool?
Say again?
A tool.
A toll. Yes, exactly. It's not a toll. Because you can get you could probably just talk to your mate who has the source code anyway, you know, that he's paid for, that he give it to you for free. I don't know. It could work like that. But like Klein says on IRC, there's other ways for making revenue, like customer support or offer training. And I think that's what a lot of firms do. I think they make back their money developing the software through customer support or dev support, expert advice or consulting, this sort of stuff. And I think that's all fine, because you're paying for someone's individual service as opposed to some massive corporation's toll for, yeah, like you said. But yeah, I guess we're getting to the end here, aren't we? We're almost 10 minutes away from the end.
Yeah.
Should I sum up?
I just wanted to touch on something once more, like, because I think it's really important, like revenue or influx of value for the developers. Like, it's better, like in proprietary software, you first pay for the software, you don't even know if you will like the software. Like, you've heard other people use that software, they say, or like Microsoft Office, you first pay. I think there is a trial, you get some 30 days, like, but obviously it's like the limitation is built into the code, and that's not the case with free software. And the donation model is perhaps better also, because you will only feel compelled to contribute if you really gain value and if you really got something valuable. In essence, you, without any paywall, without any compulsion, you have the choice to contribute to the ongoing development and support those people and software at your will.
Yeah, no, definitely. And in many cases, proprietary software, you don't even own. You can't own it. You've got to rent it. You know, so many video editing software suites, you have to rent now. In fact, audio software, you have to rent. So
yeah,
it's just a massive plus that I can just boot up Kden Live or KDN Live or whatever, however you pronounce it, and just smash out a video. Like, winning. Why would you ever go back? Why would you ever go back to renting something that you can, when you can just have it?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I've just, over the years, I've just been overjoyed over and over again to have my problem solved, to watch geeks develop even further and develop new functions and elements. The fact that I have a transactional package manager now that never has any dependency hell. Solve the problem. So the first step was having package managers, which I think Windows still doesn't have. And now we have package managers that never have dependency hell. And this is in the free software movement. This is where, you know, we have a budget of almost nothing frequently, and we manage to pull this stuff out. And yeah. Yeah, I really agree with KBK in IRC. It's a different mindset in the free software movement. You've got winning versus sharing, and we've got sharing, and sharing is what attaches to our human biology most closely, I think. We are gregarious, that means social animals, and we're sharing language, and if the language is closed, it's a dead language as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, when it's an open language, when it's free, when it's shared and you can interrogate it, that's a trade in virtue. That's a virtue that you've got.
Can we talk for a minute about something, like, it came up, and I think people don't realize that, like, we feel divorced from our moral intuitions in some cases due to the effects of the proprietary software that have come up through the last few years. Like, obviously, we know most about it from 2013, but as we regain our moral intuitions back, I think people will see, like, these are, not to say sinister, philosophies. And if we can really connect with our moral intuitions, we can see, like, free software is the way to go, and like proprietary software, it doesn't ring true with our moral intuitions.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely, well, it's interesting. There's a really famous book by Naomi Klein called No Logo. And No Logo was all about, in the 90s, selling a brand, right? And so what you think you're getting with when you buy, like, say, an Apple product is, like, all this prestige and, like, I'm a cooler person now that I own an Apple product. Naomi Klein unpacks that in the book called No Logo, and she says it's all an ideology. It's all an image that people use to sell. So I don't know how much it costs to make an iPhone. It's probably, like, $80 Australian, and they sell it for $1,000. Or when you make sneakers, for instance, you know, like 80 cents or something, and you sell it for like $300. That trick is performed by the logo, right? That trick is performed by the ideology that's packed up inside, and I'll just say capitalism. And when you look at GNU, for instance, it might look a bit impenetrable and it might look a bit difficult to understand in terms of the four freedoms, but the idea that you can just boot it up, it works. Most times you paid nothing. Why would you choose anything else?
Yeah. I think if people transition and use free software, like, just for a little while, like, I fell in love with Linux Mint, and then I moved on from there. Like, okay, I want to understand better how does this work? How does the community work? And that really got me into being, like, fully into this community, fully sold on free software, even though it's mostly never sold.
Yeah, I just think it's awesome. I think it's awesome. Like, I have some friends who participate in the mailing lists, and it's amazing watching them discuss and give and take and develop new ideas. And yeah, it's a cool social sphere to be in. It's really, really cool. It's much better. So I imagine the social sphere at, say, Facebook or Google or Microsoft, like, I remember trying to learn C# one day when I wanted to use Unity. And a lot of the videos where they try and teach you, like, say, the object-oriented system in C#, they had this guy sitting there called a Microsoft evangelist. And I'm like, what the hell's a Microsoft evangelist? It's a guy that's paid to evangelize the values of Microsoft in videos. And it just blew my mind. I'm like, this guy is just, you know, he's trying to get people to drink the Kool-Aid. It's crazy. So they're literally trying to put blinkers on people when they code, right? In the Microsoft way, I guess. Yeah, I think there's something about human biology that connects with free software that makes it work. That's the reason why it works.
Yeah. It's definitely aligned with our intrinsic biology and the way we like to relate to other people.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And
transparent.
Yeah.
Without, absolutely, like, this opaque screen.
That's right.
Which you can see nothing behind.
Yeah, I mean, when was the last time anyone looked at those books? I suppose we've got to move on to the next speaker now. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's about time. Just before we move on, the last thing perhaps we could discuss just for a minute, like, being involved and engaged in the development of software, like, our families or those who are not developers themselves, like, never feel engaged in the development of softwares like Microsoft Windows, like Facebook, Gmail, and all, Instagram. They don't feel involved. Like, but in free software, like, every single person that uses that piece of free software, like, feels like he's part of the core team, core participants, other users who use that same software, and it's not like it's not the same in other platforms.
Yeah, absolutely.
The source code, those platforms are, like, irrelevant. They have zero conversation about what the code is, and the thing is about the focus is on different things and never on the underlying infrastructure.
Yeah, definitely. It's a political thing. And I think you've got to be political. This is what I like about our endeavor. We're striving to be political and to introduce these concepts into everyday life. And the what is it? Limiting static friction for coding is very low. You can start with a Bash script. I mean, Bash is a difficult thing in itself, but you could get someone started with a Python script or, you know, scripting in Emacs. All these things are, you know, with your dot file in Emacs, that's programming. So someone would want to say, I want to get tramp to load every time I load up Emacs. You put require tramp, done. You know, like you've just coded. You've just done something that Microsoft would never be able to teach you to do.
I think we are at the end of time of this session. It was a great talk. Virag, I did not expect that we would actually be talking about topics this deep, but I think our times require us to think about these things very deeply. And
yeah,
it was great to have you here.
Thank you so much, CyberSoul. You're an awesome facilitator.
Thank you. And you're also a wonderful philosopher and thinker and speaker.
Awesome.
Okay. Ta-ta. Bye.
Ta-ta.
Take care.
You too.